Here we are in the congressional corner with Joe Courtney, a guy who really speaks his mind and represents, you know, a lot of cross-section of people, including Democrats and Republicans. Let me ask you this, Joe. I'm fascinated by what's going on with the way in which we are handling our college admissions and college affordability. I know you've taken on these on as interests. An awful lot of people seem to be going to jail for getting their kids into college by paying out money. What do you think?
Well, again, the breadth of problems that exist for post-secondary education, whether it's the elite colleges getting into or ensnared in these scams and really criminal activity, all the way down to certificate programs for young people graduating from high school who maybe have an opportunity to get into, good-paying jobs in places like healthcare and information technology, manufacturing, don't necessarily need a four-year degree to get to that place, is screaming out for reform. The last time Congress passed a higher education reauthorization, which is kind of like the farm bill of higher education, it's a five-year, it's supposed to be a five-year, package of everything from Pell Grants, Stafford Loans, Perkins, you name it, was 2008. I was actually on the conference committee as a freshman the last time we did it. And again, we have not, as a country, moved forward with a higher ed bill. I'm happy to say that the Education and Labor Committee, which I sit on, and on the Higher Ed Subcommittee, we introduced the College Affordability Act yesterday, which, again, is a long overdue rewrite of just a whole host of issues and problems that are out there right now. I mean, amongst them is just the overhang of student loan debt, which is, really hindering young people in particular in terms of, whether they get married, buy a house, start a, business, et cetera. So the bill is going to allow people to rewrite their loans to the, low interest rates that are out there in the economy right now. Again, there's people who are carrying 10% interest in private student loans. This would basically allow all of that to be rewritten down. Again, you can't do that by law. As it stands right now. And we also, I think, are going to fix the scandal of loan forgiveness programs, which basically allows people to write off the balance of their loans, particularly if they've pursued critical occupations in teaching, nursing, public safety. And we're actually extending the public service loan forgiveness program in this bill to farming because
Are we keeping our promises? I know people who say, they've been following all the rules, and now they're being told that that it doesn't count for them.
And again, we've had a hearing on that in the committee. What the Department of Education and Betsy DeVos has been doing to public service loan forgiveness is a scandal, and they are actively blocking people who, as you point out, have diligently made their payments and have been caught in this game of chutes and ladders at the Department of Education. Again, the bill basically just completely simplifies and irons out any of the statutory problems and obstacles that maybe have created delays in discharge. But also, I mean, it's going to force the department to do its job and
Will the Senate go along?
Well, Lamar Alexander is the chairman of the companion committee in the Senate, who you may recall was Secretary of Education under George Bush and Herbert Walker. And he's leaving, and he actually really cares about this stuff, and has declared that he would like to have as a legacy doing a higher ed reauthorization. So, and he's got a good partner in Patty Murray, who's a someone who gets stuff done in the Senate. So, we're just going to move forward ahead with our bill, stay in touch with the folks in the Senate, and hopefully, Alexander's stature would hopefully prevail. It's an issue which cuts across all party lines, regions. Again, there's so much we could be doing right now in terms of improving people's lives, in terms of, too much debt, giving them, opportunities to get critical skills that really will translate into good jobs. And that's what the College Affordability Act is all about.
So now you've given us a very good cross-section of educational policy. But I started by asking you whether these people who bribe their kids into college should go to jail. What do you think? Should they?
Well, obviously, you know, every one of those schools is part of the Title IV, as you know, under the federal law that qualifies for, you know, access to Pell Grants and loans. And the government actually has some real enforcement mechanisms to crack down on this stuff. And yes, I mean, and frankly, it doesn't just extend to that. You know, a lot of these for-profit colleges, which have been ripping off the taxpayers by basically peddling junk degrees, particularly targeting, ex-military through the GI Bill, we are going to crack down on those institutions. We had one of those fly-by-night firms in New London, Connecticut, that just kids showed up at school one day and the doors were closed, and they basically just disappeared in the night. And, these kids are left with big loan obligations for programs that rip them off. And so there is a whole aspect in the bill about cracking down on these types of practices, whether it's the platinum, Ivy League schools, or whether it's these fly-by-night for-profits. There is a lot of bad actors out there.
I know it's so important to you and to me, and that's the cost of pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
These companies are getting away with an awful lot, aren't they?
They are. And so if you look at that historic turnout in 2018, the biggest issue on exit polling was healthcare costs.
I believe it.
And particularly prescription drug costs. So H.R. 3, the Lower Drug Costs Now Act, which, again, it's number three, so you know the speaker has pushed this up to the highest level of priority. Will finally unshackle the government's ability to negotiate lower prices with drug manufacturers, not just for Medicare, which has been screaming out for action, but also for commercial health plans by setting up sort of a price index, which is really in line with the rest of the developed world. As you know, we overpay compared to Europe.
Canada.
And four times as much in terms of some parts of the world. So we're actually going to mark that bill up tomorrow. I'm very excited about it because it's now 23% of the premium dollar that people spend in employer-based health plans goes to prescription drugs. That's up from 12% in 2010. And so the trend line right now in terms of just the incredible skyrocketing costs of not just new drugs, but also some of the stuff like insulin, that's been off patent for years, is now basically overtaken every other component of healthcare in people's premiums, whether it's hospitals, doctors, equipment, you name it. So, I'm very excited that we're really keeping faith with what the voters asked us to do. I don't know what Mitch McConnell's going to do. Pharma hates it. Which is unfortunate.
I'll bet you're hearing from their lobbyists.
Oh yeah,
all over.
No, that's right. But what I tell them is just that what we're experiencing right now is not sustainable. I mean, you just cannot expect the U.S. patient and worker to underwrite the cost of pharmaceutical companies for the rest of the world, because that's exactly what we're doing right now, and that's got to change.
Let's go for a minute to the idea of which we haven't discussed yet. Climate change. Are we making any progress? I know how concerned you are on this.
Yeah, obviously, federally, the administration is rolling back every initiative, whether it's the Paris Climate Change Agreement, the Clean Power Plant Rule, not even the methane gas rule, which is not even about climate change, it's just poison that, they were trying to block that's there. What's interesting is that, while that's all going on down here in the Beltway, new initiatives for renewable energy is still charging ahead. And certainly if you look in the Northeast with the incredible emergence of wind power off of the coast of everywhere from Massachusetts down to New Jersey. And Connecticut, by the way, through the Port of New London, is going through a bidding process with a Danish wind turbine company that's there. And it's going to be, so we have a carbon-free nuclear power plant in Waterford, Connecticut, operated by Dominion. The wind project that is, which powers about 40% of electricity in Connecticut.
Is that wind right? 40%? 40%?
Yes, is Dominion. But this wind power project that we're looking at here is going to match what Dominion is producing. So, as I said, it's just...
Should Dominion be closed down?
Actually, the Governor Lamont just extended and renegotiated a pricing sort of mechanism that I think is going to keep the doors open for Dominion. You can't replace that big of the portfolio with the snap of the fingers. And I've been down there. I've talked to the people there. They are really serious, responsible people in terms of its operations. And I think, right now, the Union of Concerned Scientists actually issued a statement in terms of support for at least maintaining the nuclear portfolio that's out there right now, because they basically said the threat posed by climate change right now is actually larger than, all the issues that surround nuclear power in terms of waste disposal, et cetera, which is a very serious problem. And believe me, I've seen the dry casks of the spent fuel rods in person in places like Waterford and East Haddam, Connecticut, where we have a closed facility up there, the old Connecticut Yankee. So we got work to do in terms of waste disposal. But climate change, obviously, as the Union of Concerned Scientists pointed out, is something that is now posing such an imminent threat to sea level, water temperature, migrating fish, weather events. Mm. So even the Department of Defense issued a report last year in terms of climate change threat to military installations in the U.S. It's a very interesting document. I should send it to you because, they're showing that, this is having real life impact in terms of just installations right here in the continental U.S.
Hey, Joe Courtney, we are out of time, and I'm so sorry because there were so many other things I wanted to ask you about, including your great work in trying to help people who have crumbling foundations.
Yep. We'll save it for the next show.
And we will. Joe Courtney, thank you of Connecticut's beautiful 2nd District. We so appreciate your being with us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Alan.